I'm Grady Booch, and this is my column, On Architecture, the Resting Place of Innovation. You'd think perhaps that I have an unnatural fixation about rocks, for in an earlier column I talked about boulders in the context of measuring complexity. Here's another take on these old guardians of the earth and their relationship to software. Pick up a rock, and with no context, it's just a rock. Depending upon the circumstances, you might choose to skip it across a pond, throw it at an annoying small furry animal, or pile it up with other rocks to make a wall, or a home, or a fortress. If you happen to know something about geology, you might instead gaze at the face of the rock and notice the curious patterns caused by sedimentation or metamorphic processes. Break it apart, look at its pieces closely, and you might be taken by the beauty of the crystalline patterns therein. When I contemplate that same rock at its atomic and quantum level, it brings me chills as I consider its fierce beauty. The same can be said about software-intensive systems. To most of the world, software is entirely invisible. It's simply part of the atmosphere we breathe, and we give it no further consideration unless it gets in the way. To many, at the source level, software is just a jumbled mass of incomprehensible letters. To a few, quality software-intensive systems are a thing of beauty, full of drama and patterns that ebb and flow and weave in and out of one another, ultimately changing and being changed by interactions with the real world. This isn't to say that only the learned or elite can appreciate beauty. The point is one of depth of understanding and appreciation and the resulting things we do with that beauty. To the untrained ear, box fugues might be just pretty noise and nothing more. To the trained ear, their subtle elegance can inspire the creation of new, contemporary fugues, as in the work of Eric Whitaker. To the mathematician, as Douglas Hofstadter so wonderfully explained in his classic 1979 book, Gödel, Escher, Bach, a fugue will appear beautiful, simple, elegant. Before I continue, I must note that brutal pragmatism outweighs beauty most every time. If I'm fending off a vicious Australian drop bear, a large, vicious, carnivorous, but fictional Australian marsupial, I'll use whatever I have at hand, even if it's a priceless sample of moon rock. Beauty has its place, but the search for beauty in software, indeed in most things, at the expense of value is an empty pursuit. Show a typical American teenager a tract home in some suburban wasteland and you'll get a bored, dismissive response. Show it to an inhabitant of a slum tenement in New York City circa 1800, or any number of homeless in present-day Darfur, or a peasant farmer most likely anywhere in the world in the Middle Ages, and they'll likely view the most modest contemporary home as a king's palace. We who've grown up with digital devices have likewise become numb to the abundance around us, completely loudly about some small feature of our iPhone, which, resting in our hand, has more computing power and more memory than existed in the entire world just two generations ago. The same can be said of artifacts as wide-ranging as bridges, clothing, and food. Over time, that which was once innovative becomes the mundane. We look at a search engine such as Google and we yawn. It's not only part of the atmosphere, it's even morphed into a verb, as in the conjugation, I Google, you Google, he, she, or it Googles, we all Google. And yet, not that long ago, it wasn't clear how we should even approach the problem of indexing billions of web pages. In the beginning, there weren't billions of web pages to search, and the expected volume, frequency, and distribution of searches around the world were pure conjecture. However, any way we could monetize a search whose searchers would demand to be available as a free utility, this was complete speculation. Solving this problem required innovative algorithms, innovative architectures, and innovative business decisions. To some degree of goodness, all those are solved problems for Google. The marketplace has responded to their decisions and, for now, judge them good enough. That which was once innovative has become the mundane. We look at the literal engine that powers our car and for the most part ignore it unless it won't start. The design of most such internal combustion engines has been relatively stable for decades, with only incremental changes, although it required considerable innovation during its evolution. That which was once innovative has become the mundane. This doesn't mean, however, that further innovation is unnecessary in any of these domains. Architects continue to pioneer new building forms. Builders continue to experiment with new materials to reduce energy or production costs. Google continues to throw considerable resources toward innovation, as required by the forces that weigh upon their domain. For example, searching photographs is an unsolved, wickedly hard problem. Reducing the energy costs of each search is a hard problem, and mining petabytes of data is a laborious problem. In the case of car engines, the demand for fuel efficiency draws more and more software-intensive components into the solution. I hope I don't come across as a crusty old curmudgeon, but without a remembrance of things past, without a trained eye, we miss the beauty and elegance that's present in the mundane. Moreover, we miss the opportunity to truly innovate, for simply repeating what's been done, even though we're ignorant that it already has been done, isn't meaningful innovation. In this, there's also an opportunity cost. Having to reinvent the past steals energy from those places that are really fertile places for innovation. In the context of software-intensive systems, the public largely doesn't care about such things, which is quite understandable. However, to call oneself a software professional and not have that depth of understanding, or even a curiosity for understanding, is, in my worldview, unconscionable. Suppose I want to translate audible human speech. Where would I begin? Some 30 or so years ago, this was largely an unsolved problem. The hearsay speech understanding system, introduced in 1980, presented a solution in the form of an innovative architecture, namely a blackboard system. Most contemporary speech understanding systems use that same fundamental architecture, with incremental and quite valuable improvements to the analysis done by knowledge sources. Trying to attack this problem today without considering past innovation would be inefficient. This isn't to say that we shouldn't pursue out-of-the-box innovative architectures, but past innovation solutions do serve as an existence proof of at least one useful set of decisions and thus help prune the possible decision space. Suppose I want to track a single presumably evil person walking through a major city that happens to have video cameras on each street corner, while offering an acceptable degree of privacy to the city's good people. Even contemplating a solution a decade or two ago would have been a huge stretch given available computational resources, but solving that problem today seems within reach. This solution also requires innovation at the architectural level, and once that framework has proven sound, then innovation can continue at algorithmic and deployment levels to optimize the solution. Interestingly, it appears that a pipe and filter architecture seems to be the most likely candidate for this domain, an architecture that has precedence in many other systems, from compilers to graphics rendering engines. Philippe Krustin has noted that the primary source of most software-intensive system architectures is theft. We build upon that which has proven valuable in the past, and from that stable base, continue to innovate. In circumstances for which there is no such historical precedence, we have to just try things, to innovate without restraint, until we land upon a good enough architecture, and then and only then can we iterate and improve. In a software-intensive system, we might find innovation at many levels of abstraction, and where that innovation rests, we might also find beauty. Innovation can start from the bottom up or the top down. For example, as I've written about before, the field of computer graphics has required innovative algorithmic breakthroughs at each stage of advance, from simple rendering to texture mapping to fluids to clothing. In the case of relatively new genres of systems, such as video streaming portals or genomic mapping systems, our industry is just first trying things. Market forces and technical forces will weigh in if the things we try are good enough, will cast away those that are wanting, and further innovate upon those that pass judgment. In any vibrant system, therefore, innovation has no resting place. It lives in the very being of that system. Where it is common, it may not shine as brightly as in those places that are fresh. Still, to the trained eye, every aspect of every innovation calls out, not simply for the sake of being heard, but to be reapplied in new contexts, to propel innovation in ways that we cannot even contemplate without building upon the past.